From the front lines.
It's not going to work, man.
From the tailgate. Representing KGYR and its stakeholders. We are the Forum for the Fans. The Bleed Blue Show. Flying solo, here's your host, Steve.
Yeah, what's up? The Dugout Podcast around Major League Baseball. We're going to talk some baseball, of course, some Yanks, and around the rest of the AL and the NL. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, all that good stuff, man. So from the Yanks side, we'll talk about that and then get to the rest of the teams and the rest of the league. But Susie, I am happy to speak with her. It's been a long, long time here on the Dugout, but Bleeding Yankee Blue, BleedingYankeeBlue.com. Susie, probably, I know the Yanks didn't win today, but what's even better, it's almost better than Christmas, is to have a veteran like yourself back on this platform, and it only helps this platform. How are you doing, Susie Prof?
Oh, my God. So nice to be here, Steve. Thanks for having me, as always. It's been an amazing start to the season. I have to say unexpected. But you know what? As Yankee fans, I guess, you know, that's not really a fair statement. I mean, I think the Yankees always have an opportunity to win. They have more pressure on them than any other team in Major League Baseball. I'd say even in sports, quite frankly. So we should never sleep on the Yankees, right? But it has been an unexpected great start. So great to be here and to talk Yankees with you, even though, yeah, we lost in the 10th, and that's a shame. It's a game I'd like to get back. But, hey, c'est la vie. We're still winning series, right?
That is the key. And you said the word twice. You said unexpected. Why unexpected for you? I would like to know, because I don't know exactly where you stand outside of your articles over the winter. So what are your thoughts on the unexpected? You said that word twice. I'm listening very closely.
Yeah, I mean, I think I wasn't uber impressed with the off-season trades and acquisitions, and I was afraid that we were going to be the same old, same old. I mean, obviously, Juan Soto just adds so much more to the lineup as a young player who's gritty, who plays hard, who draws a lot of walks, who can get on base, right? I mean, obviously, he is definitely somebody that added value, but I didn't really see the changes to the pitching staff. I'm not a big fan of Marcus Stroman, but he has not disappointed me necessarily this year. So, yeah, I think I was disappointed in, you know, us not signing another great pitcher to pitch alongside Cole. And I think we really could have used that. But quite frankly, God bless Clark Schmidt for stepping up, for playing his best. I mean, you know, Boone has called him the bull, like, you know, confident and strong. And, you know, I think this is the first season I'm seeing it. So, yeah, unexpected, because I didn't think – I mean, we started in Houston on the road, quite frankly. I mean, I know Houston loses on the road – I mean, at home, which is quite funny to me, comical. But it was an incredible start, and they were on the road, and they were gone and had to play tough teams. And it wasn't, you know, wasn't going to be the easiest start, but yet they prevailed. I felt like one of the things I said unexpected twice, but also one of the things I wrote more recently is I think I finally have built back some trust in these Yankees to actually – even if they fall behind in the beginning of the game, they have the ability to battle back. And I think it's the small ball and just the young group of players coming together. So, I mean, today was a blip as far as I'm concerned. But the way that they're playing, the pitching, the way that they can figure out different ways to win, unexpected but exciting.
I would agree with you. That's the reason why I wanted to hear what you had to say, the reasoning behind that. Last Sunday, I was on here with DeJuan, and we talked about it as well. the Houston series sweeping them, that's unexpected. That's I'm just, you know, as an objective fan, right. That's great. Right. I mean, maybe some fans were out there calling sweeps and really it wasn't meaning it, but just talking ish because that's what a lot of fans do. But to actually do it, that is unexpected, right? And then going to Arizona, the National League champs, and giving it to them outside of one game, you know, one of the starting pitchers for the Diamondbacks, Zach Gallen. I mean, he's one of the best pitchers in the game, so that's no knock to them. But, yeah, to get to the start and winning series like we have, absolutely, this was unexpected because I had the same concerns as you as far as not enough starting pitching behind Gerrit Cole, and that was before his, you know, his injury. So getting through this right now without him, that's unexpected. You know what I'm saying? So I would be inclined to agree with you.
Thank you. I like when you agree with me.
Yeah, I mean, you're a very logical person, and I will look at myself as a logical and observative person. See, I'm a fan. Okay, let me back it up, because before we started doing this Bleed Blue show, I would call it unhinged, Susie Proud. I wouldn't get emotional. I would react very bad to bad losses and things of that nature. But when you do this stuff and you really want to have some credibility on what you're seeing, sometimes you got to put your emotions to the side. And I didn't think the Yankees this season, as you said, the pitching, it was really more about the pitching. The hitting somewhat too, but we'll talk about that as well. I wasn't confident in it. But I think there was an element I was missing, and you said it, the Juan Soto effect. That's something me and DeJuan said last Sunday. He's going to make everybody else better not because of his batting, but the approach to the plate, and everybody else is feeding off his energy. What are your thoughts? I know every Yankees fan is seeing this, how they're taking better pitches. They're being patient at the plate, and that's really, really helping them in this young season thus far. What are your thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. The plate discipline and the modeling of that plate discipline by Juan Soto has been an added factor to the offensive, I think, dominance that the Yankees have had. I agree with you. I will also throw out there that I'm impressed with the hitting coach and the way that Volpe is hitting. And obviously, I believe that he's coachable. And I always have, and I think he is, you know, undoubtedly a player who's going to make an impact in baseball. So seeing him come off a start like that, he having the discipline, he listening, being coachable, and then, you know, you've got Juan Soto in the lineup who is demonstrating this and showing how this is how you get pitchers to go deeper in counts. And you wear them out. And that's what we saw in Houston. And that is what we saw in Arizona in those first two series of the season, is the Yankees being smarter, having more discipline at the plate, being very selective with pitching, and making an impact and drawing fatigue out of the starting pitching.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And speaking of Volpe, because we were just talking about him last Sunday, and at the time, he was towards the bottom of the lineup, and me and DeJuan, I asked DeJuan a question, basically, if he kept up this hitting, how fast could we see him move up into the lineup? We were thinking Memorial Day, we were thinking June. So this was Sunday, literally last Sunday, we had this conversation.
Yeah.
Goes to show... All that Memorial Day, the June, they said, we're not going to waste no time. We're not going to protect guys at the bottom of the lineup, although we try to talk that out. He got moved up into the lineup Wednesday against the Miami Marlins that fast. And I'm not mad at it. So we were talking about how Gleyber Torres is going to lose that leadoff spot. And right now, Volpe is kind of pretty much holding serve right now since – Wednesday, the Miami game, the Miami Marlin game, because, you know, going to, you know, I know they lost that game when Stroman was on the mound. I know you were big on Stroman. He had a little shaky outing on Wednesday. But going back to Volpe, since then, you know, the Friday rainout and the doubleheader on, you know, he went 0-4, I think, on the first game in Saturday. But the second game, he was 2-4, and today he was 3-4. Sunday, he was 3-4. So he's upped his average since going. I think he went from 370 to 383 as of right now. So between him and then he's stealing bases as well. Let's talk about that element, because I believe he could definitely get 25 this year easily. You know, he's got caught stealing, I think, once or twice, but run, Volpe, run. What are your thoughts as far as Volpe at the top of the lineup right now?
Yeah.
Do you think they're going to move it back down on a permanent basis, or you think this is where he's to stay? What are your thoughts?
Well, I want to actually make a comment about what you're saying, but I also want to step back before we get into that comment and say, finally, I can predict what the lineup is going to be. Like, Boone isn't mixing things around and giving the day off and all that nonsense. Like, they're staying pretty consistent with the lineup. I mean, the only person that I think needs to be playing more is Cabrera, quite frankly, because I feel like he's demonstrated that he's got plate discipline, that he can put the ball in play, that he's defensively strong. So other than, like, them sort of rotating, you know, Cabrera for Birdie, we've pretty much stayed consistent with the starting lineup. Now, that being said, Gleyber Torres gets on base, but he hasn't really been hitting the way that I think a leadoff hitter should be hitting, and I think Volpe earned that spot. I agree. Like, we were seeing, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 batting better than, you know, 1, 2, 3, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. I mean, Judge was really slow getting started, if I'm honest. And, you know, Giancarlo Stanton is finally putting the bat on the ball. But you know him. I mean, he can go into these, like, sort of strikeout, like, you know, domino effect. Like, he can just go into a strikeout streak, quite frankly, and, you know, not put the ball in play. But what I do like about Giancarlo Stanton is he's not just hitting the home runs. He's hitting line drives like Volpe. So I'm thinking that the discipline, the consistency of the lineup, and then, of course, having Volpe be successful and moving him up when they think he can make a difference is smart. And you're right, he's fast. He can bunt. He can run fast. He puts pitchers, you know, in anxiety slightly, because now they have to pay attention. If they put him on base, he not only has good plate discipline so he could walk, but he's a threat to run, and he's a threat to take extra bases. If you have Volpe on first base and you hit a deep line drive into the corner outfield, he's scoring. He's absolutely scoring, and we saw that
a couple of times
in the last week, right? So mm-hmm. Not everybody can do that, but he can. And you know who also is impressing the heck out of me, and I think he should be in the lineup more, is Wells, who can run. Talk about stealing bases. A catcher that can steal bases and is a switch hitter, my God, he should be playing over Trevino more than – I mean, finally Trevino got his first home run today. But, you know, I like Trevino, but Wells should be in the lineup more than Trevino, quite frankly.
You know what? You're kind of stealing a little bit of the notes I had laid out for this episode. So, you know what? I'll go to it right now. I'm going to come back to the Volpe. Because I was going to ask you –
you want me to just answer the questions and not veer off, Steve? Okay.
No, that's cool. You can veer off, because I'll just bring it up. Like, you know what? You kind of – you know, you ever play that game as a kid? Battleship, you know, kind of know where you're kind of knowing exactly where my pieces are on this show right now. Because I was going to bring it up, the catchers. Yes. And might as well bring it up now since you brought it up. So, you know, with Wells and Trevino, with this makeup of this team, this particular team, what exactly what you would like or want out of the catcher? Is it basically defensively be more – in tune, be more focused with that, and then live with whatever hitting you get? Or do you want the hitting to be a little bit better and slide off on the defensive catching? Or is it more of calling the games? Because that's why you brought up Wells with his ability to hit. He needs to hit a little bit more, I believe. But Trevino did get a homer, but that's not necessarily his game, although he could offensively contribute. How do you look at the catchers right now as a unit? What do you want them to be for this season? Because catchers are all – everybody has a different style of how they want for a catcher. Some are captains, or not. Some are not. Some just call good games. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm going to be greedy here for a moment. I mean, I grew up in an era where defensive and offensive catchers were prime, right? I mean, you know, watching the Johnny Benches of the world, Jerry Grody just died this week, who was obviously on the 69 Mets, known for his defensive and offensive play. You know, we saw Jorge Posada, Rick Cerrone, Thurman Munson. I'm greedy. I want the whole package, Steve. And I finally see it in Wells. I know he's young. And I know he should be swinging the bat a little bit better, but I think he's coming. He's coming along, and he's going to be the future of this team, or the future style of catching that we're going to see in this team. So yeah, I guess I want it all. I think a catcher needs to be able to call pitches, needs to be confident, needs to be a leader on the team, needs to be able to hit, run. I mean, I know that maybe most catchers have a little bit harder time running, you know, given the fact that they're behind the plate. But I will say, like, I'm seeing a lot more agility in today's catcher than ever before. And I want it all, Steve.
Mm-hmm. Do you think we'll get it all between Wells and Trevino? I get what we want, but what do you think the expectations with our tandem, though?
Yeah. I mean, the tandem, you know, we need them both. Yeah. I mean, I honestly think Wells is better suited for what I'm looking for holistically from a catcher. That being said, I realize Wells can't catch every game. And so when Trevino is called upon, I feel that he needs to step up in a way that makes a difference. And we see a lot of catchers doing this, you know, kind of work across the league where, you know, the dominant catcher who catches, let's say, most of the games needs a day off here and there, or might even be a DH if that catcher is strong enough. You know, I want to see us have the whole package. And do these two players have the whole package? I mean, we didn't talk about Roytbet. I mean, Roytbet has potential, you know, and he might be somebody that steps into that. I think he just needs a little bit more support and time. I mean, we have catchers in development, and, you know, I don't think it's a guarantee that Trevino stays as the – if he is, in fact, the lead catcher or the starting catcher – there's no guarantee that he stays there. I think it comes down to who's going to give us the best consistently over time, and I guess time will tell. But I kind of put my money in Wells's bank account at this point.
Okay, cool. Yeah, because this is a position for the last several years where we haven't had the optimization of the level of what you're used to, especially the Johnny Bench era, Thurman Munson. So yeah, that is a tall task. And that's the crazy thing about that, because those athletes in that era produce more in an era where athletes are pretty much better. And that's kind of little, you know, since Posada, it's kind of, been the turnstile in that particular position. So I would like, you know, this is an organization with great catchers, Yogi Berra, you know, Thurman Munson, and Posada, and a small stint with Mike Stanley. So it is a little odd, to say the least, you know, as far as where the Yankees could be with 2024 or 21st century catching. So, yeah, I mean, no team or no roster is perfect, cliche to say, but this is probably an Achilles heel right now, currently on this roster. Would you agree with that, or is there something else on this team do you think is probably the weakest point? What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, the Achilles heel for this team right now, that's a tough question. Let me tell you where it's not. I mean, I think we have great depth in the outfield. I feel very strong about what I see in the infield from who we have, and even when we, like, you know, trade off and put, you know, others in defensive positions late innings, I feel pretty good about it. I think the Achilles heel right now for the Yankees is the starting pitching. Even though I'm, like, happy with Rodon, I mean, he has a terrific ERA at this point. Stroman, he got lit up, but he's holding strong. Like, I hope he has longevity. But I think the Achilles heel right now for the Yankees is our starting pitching.
Okay.
Despite the good start, I'll be honest, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, they had that, two seasons ago, where we were talking about the unexpected earlier in this episode, but 2 years ago, where they really got off to a great start in the first half of the season because of the pitching. But 2 years later, same thing. How long can it hold up? We shall see. It remains to be seen. That's why they play 162, and the averages always balance itself out. But going back to Volpe, so let's hypothetically, if he's going to be at the starter line, the top of the lineup, at that, you know, batting in front of Soto, how many runs do you think he could produce outside of not getting injured if he plays 150 out of 162? Health-wise, he should be able to rack up runs like crazy. Not RBIs, but scoring runs. What? How many do you project if this is the formula? And I expect the average to dip a little because there's no way. I mean, that's just – this sport, professional sports, as you know, Susie, probably you know sports. Baseball is the hardest thing to do in sports is hit that thing. So I expect averages to dip. But how do you think run production he would be able to do, especially one of the greatest hitters he has right behind him in the lineup in Juan Soto?
Wow, you're asking tough ones. I mean, I think, you know, he gets on base, right? So, you know, he gets – that's the thing. Like, what you're saying is, like, you know, okay, so he gets on base. And if we get, you know, the production out of the front of – the batting order that we think we're going to get. Whew. I mean, honestly, like, he could score, you know, average of 1 to 2 runs a game? 150? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's going to be, like, wow, like 300 runs. I'm like, that's not totally out of the question.
That's a gamble. That's a bet right there. That's an MGM bet right there.
Right, it's not out of the question. I mean, think about it. If we get the production that we think that we're going to get out of Soto and Judge, and I'll leave the rest of them out for now, and you keep Volpe in the, you know, number one slot, in the leadoff slot, wow, holy cow. That's going to be an absolutely an incredible opportunity for us. And, you know, I don't know, like, what Derek Jeter's, like, when they moved Derek to the starting, leadoff, what he scored. I mean, he doesn't have, he never had the speed that I see Volpe having. So I don't know that that's like even a fair. But like, you know, I don't know what did Soto, and again, he, you know, I read a really interesting article about Juan Soto in The Athletic last week, and it's kind of stuck with me. Like, Soto, as good as he is, he hasn't played for a team where he has not felt that he fully could trust the team. It's a very interesting article because Washington, like, he, you know, that's where he grew up. When I say grew up, you know, that was his first stop. And
right.
You know, saw what happened there. And then he went out to San Diego and he was just amongst all these different guys. Not that there's anything wrong with San Diego. You know, they're a team full of really good players. I don't know that they've ever really gelled and played like a team. So they're like, I don't want to say that they're a bunch of misfits, but they're a bunch of guys that have come together, hot shots, if you will, right? Machado's and Tatis and, you know, Soto was in there. And I just don't know if he had an opportunity to shine and therefore, like, that trust factor comes in. I think he actually is settling in. The way that he's, like, embracing the fans, I don't know. I think if they keep that lineup consistent, we could see Volpe score 300-plus runs this year.
Ooh, that would be great. I don't know if I'll go that high, but I definitely marching on 200 for sure. Should it not even be out of the question? Because theoretically, think about it like this. Let's say his approaches are at the plate right now stays consistent, talking about Volpe. Let's say 4 at-bats on average each game. I'm not going to say 2 hits every game, but definitely out of that, maybe a good 25%. You know, so every 4 games, he's getting 2 hits, right? But let's say in between that, there's a game he may get a hit or not even get a hit, and there's based on balls you got to take into account. So I would assume he would draw at least 1 walk in one of those 4 games, if not every other game. So his on-base, his OPS should be up there regardless of hits or not. And then if Soto could stay healthy, and that's, you know, that's also relying on players behind you being healthy and how they approach the plate. And now with the rules with the shift, you can't do the shift. So it's going to actually help them, like help Soto and Volpe move around the bases, and especially him stealing bases. I would think he'll steal a lot more with that speed. And that's a lot for a starting pitcher to really have on his mental, especially if he's mentally weak. So that's one of the things in baseball I would love to know the stats one day. We're probably never going to be allowed to see that. I know they try to find stats and, you know, physically, but mental, there's got to be something with mental stats where a pitcher is mentally weak. He worries about base runners, worries about the guy at the plate. So imagine a guy who's probably not as strong mentally. He's not an ace. He's probably a 3 or 4 starter. You got Volpe leading with a lead, leading off the first base, ready to steal second. You got one of the best hitters in the 21st century, Juan Soto, at the plate. That's a lot. And then, that's a lot to handle if you are not mentally strong to deal with that task. And not a lot of pitchers are mentally strong unless you are an ace. Like, that's why the aces – because the aces get the job done with strikeouts and getting guys out, but they're mentally strong. The aces are just strong in the head. So I would think, this could really – I mean, the Yankees definitely could use this. But he could definitely score a lot of runs, stay healthy. Soto stays healthy. And then whenever Judge starts to pick it up, we should be optimum at that. But let me say one thing. You said something about Soto being embraced by the fans. That was without question, because I think that really started in Houston, because his body language, especially the put out, the assist from the outfield in the ninth inning, that opening day, to get the guy out. I forgot who it was that he tagged out, or Trevino put the tag on. And his pumping of the fist, and then just after every hit, Susie Prof, the body language, you know, like it was like a jolt, like a bolt of energy of his being pumped up And the fans, the Yankee fans love that stuff. Love it a lot. It's just the way he carries himself, just off of hits or just getting guys out and just talking smack to the opposing team, especially Houston, because you know Houston has our number. That rubs off the right way within the clubhouse. Anything else you'd like to add to that?
Yeah, honestly, you're right in the way that he reacts and the way that the fans see his confidence and that then, of course, rubbing off on the clubhouse. The other thing that – have you seen his expression at the plate, the way he stares down pitchers?
Yeah.
Whoa. Like, you talk about, like, not having, like, the mental capacity as a, you know, maybe not an ace, like a third starter or even a second starter. You got Juan Soto, like, staring you down. Holy crap. You don't think that that, like, throws you off? It absolutely does. He's very intimidating. For a guy that has one of the nicest smiles in baseball, he's very intimidating when you're looking down at him from the hill. And you know, luckily, like, the coverage has been great where I can, you know, see, you know, the basically the whites of his eyes, and he is just, like, intimidating as heck. So, yeah, I agree. I like the way he shows emotion. I like the way that he carries himself with confidence. And you know, he's putting, you know, the hits where that expression is going. Even like you mentioned in that game where he threw out, made the great play and threw out the runner going to second or whatnot. He wasn't known for his defensive play. Mm-hmm. And he has worked so hard on improving that and showing people that they were wrong. So the fact that he put so much of his body and strength into those plays that we see out in the field and the way he reacts, it just makes me like him even more.
Oh, absolutely. There's another aspect to what you were saying. I'll add to that. You know, what you were saying about staring down pitchers or intimidating pitchers. You know who else he's intimidating as well? The umpire. I will go back to I think it was the Miami game.
Yeah.
There was a pitch. I think it was Weathers. Mm-hmm. He threw a pitch. It was off the plate, but it was a ball in my eye. You know, when you're watching on TV, it's easy to pick up where the ball is placed, how it crosses the plate. And it was a ball, but I think the umpire called a strike. And I think Juan Soto, and I think it was like a 2-1 count or something like that. And he checked the umpire immediately because sometimes a batter, if a ball is on the outside, but the umpire calls strike, a lot of players would probably shake their head or, you know, they'll do something along that line. They'll shake their head in disagreement, right? But in this particular case, he said, I couldn't really make out what he said because you could see the camera shot from, I guess, the dugout at, you know, straight ahead at Juan Soto, moving his lips. He was talking to the umpire. And I believe that really makes umpires check themselves sometimes. Because it's one thing if the umpire is calling strikes and balls for a player who's not Juan Soto, let's say your average run-of-the-mill baseball player. But if it's Juan Soto, you're probably going to want to pay attention a little bit or do your job a little bit better. Because we both know all umpires, this is what makes the game unique, because all balls and all strikes are not created equal. It all depends on how the umpire calls it, right? There's some umpires who are hitter-friendly. There's guys who are pitcher-friendly. So I was just echoing what you were saying because I noticed that in the Miami game, him immediately checking the umpire on his disagreement with verbiage. And because it is Juan Soto, he could do that. I don't think the average player could do that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think Judge is another one. I think he's earned the right to question, and I think finally umpires know how to call balls and strikes on a guy that's, you know, as tall as Judge. So I think he's like another one. There's a few out there, you know. I mean, Mookie Betts is having himself a season, right? And he's somebody
that
I think – yeah. he's somebody, and he has great eye, and he's somebody that would demand that. There are a few players in this game today that command that kind of respect. I mean, Jeter obviously was one of them for years. But yeah, I mean, I like that. I like what you say when you look at a guy like Soto that can be impactful against opposing pitching, with umpires, with teammates, with fans. That's just,
yeah,
you know, incredible.
There's a lot of control.
He can be that impactful.
Across all boards, like, that is key. Like, fans, the pitcher, the umpire, the clubhouse. Like, when's the last time we've seen it across the board like this? Especially with a player coming on to the team, with his as an acquisition. I can't remember a player for the Yankees. I have to think
Yankees. I can't remember a player, but the player that stands out to me that did this was Gary Carter for the Mets.
Okay.
Back in 85-ish. Mm-hmm. When he first came on. I don't remember when he came in. I mean, obviously he was there in 86, but he might have come in 84, 85. He was like the beginning, and then they brought in Keith Hernandez, and obviously they were going to build this championship team. But I think like that contribution, that leadership, that the way Gary Carter played, that's who I think of, who came in as an acquisition and made a fast impact across multiple stakeholders quickly, mm-hmm. like a quick, fast impact. But see, like, I'm reading this book now, Steve, called Be the Unicorn. And, you know, the traits that Soto has are very much the traits that this book says you need to have to be a unicorn. And it's incredible. It is incredible when I think about it.
There's only one unicorn.
Sorry?
There's only one unicorn. His name is, no, he's not even a unicorn. He's an alien. It's Shohei Ohtani. It's an alien. It's an extraterrestrial. Like, this guy's an alien. Right? We'll get into that around the rest of the baseball soon. But, yeah, go ahead. What's the traits of the unicorn from the book?
Yeah, so essentially there are 12 data-driven habits that separate the best leaders from the pack. And there's a number of them that I can think of just off the bat that make me feel like Soto's got like standards or characteristics that help people, you know, sort of stand out. So some of those would be he's likable. Believe it or not, that's a unicorn trait, right? Being likable across multiple different kinds of stakeholders, team members, cross-cutting across a team, across the organization. Fast. And it's not fast running necessarily, but knowing the difference between when to act. So this is where you see the patience at the plate, right? When to act or when to leave. Like, when to leave well enough alone and don't, like, know that that's a distractor from where you're headed, to acting fast on an opportunity. I think he does that really well. Authenticity. I think we see who Juan Soto really is on the field. He conducts himself, you know, genuinely. Purpose. He has purpose. He knows what he's set out to do and needs to back that up. That's a habit that he actually has in, you know, driving forward, you know, the future, the vision of this team. I mean, I just threw out four, but there are eight others that I would say, you know, he would fall into those categories very simply. But these few. Another one is agile, being able to pivot. I haven't had the opportunity to see that too much yet, but the fact that he's been able to pivot across multiple teams and have that kind of impact says a lot. And, you know, I think we're going to see him pivoting a lot this season as needed. But, yeah, I think he is, you know, the kind of person you want on a team because he adds that color. He adds that genuine nature. He's coachable, but yet he demonstrates so many good traits that both his peers and you know, the youngsters that are coming up to the Yankees need and can emulate off of. So, yeah, absolutely think he's a unicorn.
Yeah, he has greatness written on all over him. I remember years ago when the Yankees played the Nationals in D.C., and Juan Soto hit a bomb home run. I remember talking to the guys down in D.C. They do a sports podcast, kind of like how we do with the Bleed Blue Show. They cover all the D.C. teams. And I was like, and then I remember at the time, I said, damn, man, you guys got a player right there. Like, you know, like when you watch sports, and especially baseball or whatever, you see a guy, his hitting, the way he jumps off the bat, and he's hitting opposite field home runs. And you're like, man, you guys are good for the next 10 years. I mean, little did we know that he was going to be going over to San Diego within a couple of years from that point. But him to be in Yankee pinstripes is only going to elevate his superstar status, not because – well, it's a match made in heaven. It's the peanut butter and jelly. It's, Juan Soto's already a superstar, and it's the Yankees. It's the best franchise in sports, North American sports. So him to be – along with the face of the franchise, along with Aaron Judge. Yeah, these are two unicorns. These are gigantic superstars that, and they're top 10. They're both top 10. It's not too often, and maybe the Dodgers have this. The Dodgers probably have this as well. Two players that are in the top 10 in baseball. So the Dodgers definitely have that. And the Yankees definitely the climb out of the AL East cellar from last season. Right now, like you said, winning series, and that's always a good thing. You know, build the lead in the AL East. Unexpected, yes. That's the theme. I should rename the name of this episode. Call it Unexpected with Susie Prof from Bleeding Yankee Blue. Because I didn't think that the sweep, I could see us winning the series, but it was really the sweep in Houston. I think that was the unexpected. And I think that's the reason why we probably have a 2-3 game lead right now because of that opening series. So, and they have held, you know, par since then, you know, winning series. Let me ask you this. We'll go around the rest of the Major League Baseball. Trevor Story out for the year for Boston. That grew, you know, bad break for them, good for us. I don't think anything surprising for me right now, outside of the Yankees, the way they played all since the start of the season. Any surprises in the AL East for you?
Probably the slower start that Toronto had. I mean, I guess, you know, they played us hard when we did play them. Mm-hmm. But I think I was a little surprised that they started off, you know, and the bats were quiet, essentially. You know, I always think Vladimir is going to kill us, you know.
right.
But you know, they always give us a tough time, but I would say that I was kind of surprised about them. I think the Brewers came out with a really good start. Pittsburgh, I was pretty surprised, especially since I always feel like Pittsburgh is always looking to get rid of some really good players and shop them around. But, like, for some reason, they are gelling. I think they're either the best team or the second best team in baseball right now. Like, holy crap, I never would have thought that from them. Mm-hmm. I mean, Miami, I'm not surprised that they're playing so poorly.
Even them starting 0-9
quite
or something,
frankly,
like that? They started 0-9.
Yeah,
you think that was surprising?
No, I don't. I don't think it is. I think they have a lot of work to do, Steve. I'm not surprised. I'm not about that. But I'm more surprised about some of the other teams that I'm kind of throwing out there, like Pittsburgh being so good and, you know, and Brewers really having their way against the Mets. You know, those were things that I was sort of shocked about. I mean, I always think Philly's going to be, you know, competitive. I always think that the Dodgers will be in it, you know. But, yeah, I mean, I would say Pittsburgh is a pleasant surprise for me because I do like them. Yeah, that's where I'm at.
Yeah, Pittsburgh, I would say they did this last year. They got off to a very good start, and they really faded in, I think, August. But they have actually a decent team with Reynolds and Joe and Hayes. Decent squad. You know, that NL Central is actually better than I think a lot of people give it credit for. I think there's no way St. Louis could just be that bad 2 years in a row, even though outside Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt. They do need help around them, you know, because those are some top. They're still top 30 players in my opinion. They're still great players even at their older age, but they need help around those guys. But Cincinnati, I think they're going to be better than what they were. There's a lot of excitement in Cincinnati when it comes to guys like De La Cruz, Jonathan India. But, yeah, the NL Central is actually better than what I think people give it credit for. I don't know. Maybe it's because they're kind of the Midwestern teams and the Cubs are still a brand. I mean, they're all brands, but the Cubs are the corner franchise in that division. Mm. But outside of that, you were missing the AL. You know, the Toronto, that's the issue always has been their pitching. They can't get around that. Even despite all the third generation offsprings of the Suns, you know, Gladimer and Guerrero and Bichette. Yeah. You know, they had good hitters. It's the pitching that's going to kill them, and it's going to continue to kill them.
Steve, you know what though? Like you talk about Toronto, like. This, you've got Bichette and Guerrero going into free agencies next year. So, you know, I mean, bye. Like, you know, good. Go. Yeah. Like, I hope you go to a National League team and don't bother us anymore. But, you got to think about that. How about the Tigers, though? You know, I forgot to say about the Tigers. I always sleep on them. And they had a good start. I mean, they, you know, kind of leveled off now. They're 9-6, I think. But, you know, they had a tremendous start. The Guardians always seem to be strong. They always start off well. Again, a blip today bothers me. And you know, like the Orioles are always, you know, in the last couple of years have started to, not even the last couple, I would say in the last year, have started to really find their way, so to speak. I mean, I like Adley Rutschman, but I think, you know, you've got some electricity, coming from Holiday's kid, who I think is going to have, his way with the Yankees when we play them.
Yeah, going back to what we were saying about, I'll get to the AL Central, but you know, Baltimore, I think their time is now to really show that last year was not a fluke, even though they had a premature out to the World Series, the eventual World Series champions, the Texas Rangers. But that's a very good team, and I think the Yankees found out last year, and there's going to be some big time games, almost going back to like how it used to be in the mid '90s. Where those two teams collided, and the Yankees, you know, had the break with Jeffrey Myers. But since that point, one franchise, which was us, went on to win multiple championships, and Baltimore went into the pinnacle of baseball hell. And they haven't been relevant since that. but yeah, to your point, Detroit actually did get off to a strong start. They kind of tapered off, and I get you. But the team that actually surprised me more than anything was the Royals. Now, I don't know if it lit a fire under the whole city with the – I don't know if you knew what was going on with the stadium situation, with the sales tax locally, how the owners really were threatening them with the if you don't get us a new stadium, we're out, kind of deal with the baseball and the football team. But on the field, the Kansas City Royals – the sweep against Houston, that gave me a little eyebrow raise, Susie Proff. I'm like, oh, I went back and watched some of the games to see how it happened and why did it happen. I think it said a little bit more about Houston per se, because at the end of the day, I don't care how bad Houston starts, they'll end up somewhere competing for the AL West. But as far as the Royals, between Salvador Perez, who was hitting 333, Bobby Witt, the shortstop is hitting very well at his 340 average, and Seth Lugo is pitching very well, and Nelson Velasquez, the outfielder, hitting well as well. I mean, he got three guys well over 330, and then you add in Brady Singer, Cole Reagans, Seth Lugo. That was a winning formula to where they are currently. Will they keep up? Here's the crazy thing. In that division, I still think it's the Twins. I don't care how bad they start. I still think they have the better talent up and down. And this is why they play 162 and not, 20, 25 games. So, I still think the Twins, at the end of the day, is going to catch, it's between Minnesota and Cleveland, but I will still get the nod to Minnesota in the AL Central. What are your thoughts on that? And then anything else you'd like to add?
You know what? The Twins never go anywhere. I'd like to see the Royals. I'm glad you're bringing this up because I actually would like to see the Royals step up. You know, I still have a little bittersweetness seeing the Mets fall to the Royals in 2015, and obviously they hand built that team. The Mets really had the stronger team, but the Royals beat the Twins 11-0 in the first or second. Yeah, I guess that was the first series of the season for them. And then they played well against the Orioles. They weren't. They only won one of the games out of the three, but they played well. But then, to your point, they came in and just trounced all over the Astros. So it'll be interesting to see how this kind of fleshes out. I mean, it's so early. It's April, right? And so, injuries happen and who's got the longevity and whatnot. You're right. The Twins somehow figure out how to be relevant. But I think, it would be interesting to see a race, Royals and Guardians and Tigers. And wouldn't that be just kind of interesting?
Absolutely.
Than just the Twins, the same old, same old. Because I feel they've kind of gotten a label now, brand, that, they're an early exit. They're a team that people roll over. It would be kind of interesting to see other teams and seeing if they can actually compete. You think about the Arizona Diamondbacks. I am not a Diamondbacks fan. I was out in Arizona for spring training.
I saw you on IG.
And,
how was that, by the way?
It was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. But I go into the gift shop. I'm not buying anything from the Diamondbacks. No way. You beat me up. I should have won that World Series, But it was interesting to see them in there and not leave. In the World Series, Texas Rangers never won. And then you got the Diamondbacks beating up, really playing hard. Wow. This was so unexpected. Talk about unexpected, that was going to be the outcome, that those two teams were going to make it interesting in October. They absolutely did. And, the Rangers will be my heroes for beating up Houston the way they did. And, forever and ever, thank God. It'd be interesting to see. The Twins are early exiters. It would be interesting to see the Orioles and Yankees, really having a level playing field this year, us really going after them. That would be interesting. You're right. Don't sleep on the Central, either NL or American League Central, because there's some interesting things going on out there that I'd like to see continue. I'd like to see the Pirates and the Brewers and the Reds all be competitive. And we never want to sleep on really the Cubs or the Cardinals, because you're right. All they need is a hot streak, and they're back in it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely. And I'm really big, especially in sports, with rivals. So it was great to see that the almighty Houston Astros had a rivalry with their in-state rivals. That Dallas versus Houston rivalry has always been a rival in Texas, and it's carried over into baseball. So that's great for the sport. And like you said, Texas, coming back to win those series, and then the same thing with Arizona when they went to beat the Philadelphia Phillies. And I'll talk about that real quick. The Phillies and Braves, every time they pair up, like they did earlier this season, I am my eyes are glued because that's all about the NL East, the Kings of that division. But, you know, like you said, the Yankees, Camden, what's it called? Camden, Oriole Park at Camden Yards, right? That is Yankee Stadium. It's great. You're familiar with the stadium as I am. We've been both to that ballpark. It's great that both teams will be good. You're going to get fans going to both places because of, you know, it's close to each other. Just can't use, you don't even need to use the key bridge to get there. You just got to go through the tunnel. You know what I'm saying? So you need to use the key bridge. You don't even need to get the key bridge. So you just go down 95, the turnpike, and then that's good.
Take the train,
good.
Quite frankly.
You take Amtrak? Yeah, you're right.
I could take Amtrak.
Absolutely. Yeah. So rivalries are good for sport, especially, you know, New York, Baltimore is 3.5. Like, same thing with Dallas, Houston, same thing. San Diego, Los Angeles is 2 hours from each other. So good. The sport is easy. You know, Boston, New York, same thing. So, yeah. But this is a great discussion, Matt, Susie Prom. Thanks for coming on. Final thoughts from you. Anything, articles you got coming out? I got to, you know what, since I've been gone and all that, let me give me something to read, especially when I'm, downtime and as well as, I get the tweets and all that, so it's good to keep up with thoughts of what's going on in your mind and how you put it from thoughts to paper or to the website.
Yeah, I mean, I think, what we're trying to pay attention to is sort of like what's interesting about this team. Like, we don't want to just like cover, the Yankees are, winning and, play by play and blah, blah, blah. No, I'm interested in, how we're winning. Like, I wrote a piece last week about Juan Soto's love affair with the Yankees, and that's where I was, citing, The Athletic and just really got into, the player and sort of what is he contributing and what do we expect him to contribute this year. I also, I wrote a piece about Anthony Volpe and how he's, the changes to his batting stance. So for me, I think you can expect some of these player profiles as I'm seeing them sort of come together. And you've even given me some food for thought, just maybe talk a little bit about, Austin Wells and, how his contribution is really important for the Yankees. And not to sleep on that. And maybe I talk a little bit more about Anthony Volpe and his, leading off. So I think I like to focus on some interesting aspects of the team as it relates to what's going on currently in baseball, what's going on with a particular player and their contribution. I know that our editor-in-chief, Robert Casey likes to, really talk about, the changes to the team and the trades or the hot takes, the hot news. So I expect some of that, I would say, this week as well. We're in Toronto, so we've got even though they're in the bottom, I still think like they're always going to be a threat to the Yankees. So we'll get some interesting pieces on that. Guerrero likes to, really talk shit on the Yankees. So I'm sure there'll be some of that kind of nonsense coming out. But yeah, that's what you can likely expect.
It's going to be a fun 2024. Susie Prof, thanks for coming on. I'll probably pick up the conversation next Sunday at an earlier time. Yankees currently in first place, unexpectedly. That's the unofficial name of this episode. It's always good to get the wisdom from you. You're always traveling. That's one of my favorite things I love about you. You see the world and you know your sports. That's my kind of people right there, man. Susie Prof. Susie Prof 1 on IG and as well as Bleeding Yankee Blue. Shout out to you, Susie. What you got to say in between games. Absolutely. We'll be back. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. Susie Prof, have a great start of your week. And this episode definitely go up on the social media. Check it out, man. All right, Sangre, so ladies and gentlemen, Susie Prof, be easy. Take care. Bleed blue.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
bleep, bloop, bleep, bloop.